of Mitzvah Lamed Gimel, Mitzvah Kibbutz Avayim. And I wanted to look more this time at the halachic portion, the notion that he taught us last time of the connection between Kibbutz Avayim and Tvoid Shemayim, that when Chazal of Torah that Hishva Kosov put over the Imel Lechot Shechino, it's in a very real sense. It's not only metaphorically to tell us, it's very significant, but it actually, as the Chinuch explains, the gateway to appreciate the Rabbeinu Shalom is through appreciating our own parents. If we can't appreciate the fact that our parents have given us the gift of life, all that they toiled to raise a tiny infant, that we should survive and thrive in this world, if we can't appreciate that, then it's impossible to appreciate the Rabbeinu Shalom. So in that sense, it's tied to Kriyat Shemayim. And in that sense, we have another perspective on the Chazal. Chazal tell us that one of the Amoraim, Tanoim, I don't recall at the moment which, that when his mother walked into the room, he said the Shekhinah comes. So, in a very real sense, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, it's through the identification of the appreciation with ourselves, within ourselves, defining within ourselves the love of our parents, that we connect to the Rabbeinu Shalom as well. And in that sense, when he saw his mother, he saw the Shekhinah. Because what it evoked within him, his feelings of appreciation and connection, evoked the presence of the Rabbeinu Shalom, those feelings towards the Rabbeinu Shalom to even a larger degree. That was from the standpoint of the Hashkofas. At the very end, I want to go to the very end of the mitzvah, because he says something very revolutionary here, the Sefer HaChinuch, and quite controversial. In the very last paragraph, on page Kuf Pei Dalet, the very last paragraph of this mitzvah, Mitzvah Lamed Gimel, V'noyheges b'chol mokom b'chol zman. This is not limited by time nor by place, obviously. B'schor b'v'nekevus, not by gender. Kol zman she'evshlehem, as long as a person has the physical ability to be able to give cover to his parents, to care for them, and all the halachas implied by kavod, he's obligated to do so. Now, one may wind up in a situation that the child is of such advanced age that the child himself needs help, and he's no longer in a situation to serve his parent. And I'm always reminded, and my shver is always angesund. I heard the story as a child, and my shver told me that he actually knew who the people were. There was a family in the town of Namir that was very long-lived. I mean, 100 years was, you know, if they didn't live to 100, they just hadn't lived at all. And at a simcha in Namir, there was a very old man, he was 98 years old, and he used to come to the gavva that was in charge of giving out the cake, and he says, I want 2 pieces of cake. He says, one for myself and one for my yingala. His yingala was 76 years old. You know. So, you know, a person could live to such a point that he himself needs help from those that are younger than he is. He's no longer in a position to help an elderly parent. He's an elderly man himself. But as long as he has the physical capabilities. Now he writes, if one violates this, and the einish is very grave. He acts as if he's estranged from the Rabbeinu Shalom himself. This is based on the notion that he told us that kavod over the ima was to bring us to kavod shemayim. So if I don't have kavod to my parents, I can't have kavod for the Rabbeinu Shalom either. And even to such extent, the Minchas Chinuch wondered if kibur avayim belongs in the mitzvah benodol lachavera altogether. Perhaps totally is oriented towards achieving that connection with the Rabbeinu Shalom. And therefore, in essence, it really is a mitzvah benodol lamokom, even though it involves people. So far, so good. Now he writes, v'mgesh koyach with Bezdin. If Bezdin has the ability to do so, right, but they didn't, have different powers and different strengths at different times. If koyfen oisai, then they force a person to fulfill the mitzvah. K'moshu v'savnu l'maylo, sh'bebitul asei koyfen Bezdin. The halacha is if one doesn't want to do a mitzvah, say a person doesn't want to eat in a sukkah. So Bezdin has the power, The halacha, in fact, is makino yisoyed shetetzi nafshu. There's no shir. They use coercion, even physical coercion, and until the person relents and decides to go to a sukkah. If he doesn't relent, you just keep on giving it to him, even at shetetzi nafshu. The problem with this, if we look at the very last piece in the Minchas Chinuch, in the left column, the very last piece of Mitzvah Lamed Gimel, when the Arava Mechaber Kosev Kan, the Sefer HaChinuch is written, the Koivin HaMitzvah Zu, Kamo B'chol HaMitzvahs. Just as we would force a person to eat matzah, we would force a person to go reside in a sukkah, we force a person to be Mekayim, Kivit Avayim. Vayim Bar Goz Me'a Mishnah L'melech Tamozeh. And in his side notes, the Mishnah L'melech raised a very serious question about this statement. Ramavua b'chulin perakol abosar kufyudam adbeiz, dal kibir ava'im ain kaifin, that when it comes to the mitzvah of kibir ava'im, we do not force a person. Why? So we have a principle in Chazal, the mitzvah tasei shemat n'schorah b'tzidah ain kaifin. If the Torah specifically writes a schar, a reward for doing the mitzvah, then we don't force a person to do it. And here the Torah writes, L'man yarichon yamecha. So any mitzvah, as I say, where the Torah defines the schar, we don't force a person. So how did the Chinuch write this? V'ayein ta'as simen reish mem sifkot na'alem sifkot mevok. So I want to take a look at this ta'as. This ta'as is very fascinating. The ta'as explores this Gemara. It explores a number of conflicting statements that we find in Chazal in terms of tefillah. Taz is very at the very beginning of Siman Reish Mem. He writes the following. The Perak Kol Abosar Isahoch. It's a very fascinating story in the 8th Perak in the Gemara Chula. Duhu Gavra Dulu Havi Meikur Avuah. There was a person that did not give proper cover to his father. So they were not laid back about it. As you were the Kamei of Chizda, they arrested him and they brought him to Bezdin. It's a violation of the law. You don't want to give Kibbut Avayim. So they arrested him and they brought him to Bezdin. Is Kapsi Lahal Kaisan. So the Amora of Chizda had him tied up and was about to give him Malkus for violating this Sasei. In the east of a mitzvah sasei, she know them right to the kayim. If a person doesn't want to fulfill the mitzvah sasei, makanai so it should take to nafsho until he relents. Veik lashom Rav Mori. Now this guy had a mazel that Rav Mori happened to show up in the bezdin right before they already tied him up and they were about to start giving him the malchus, and Rav Mori showed up in bezdin. V'omar shafku, and he said, let this guy go. Disanya, komitzes asei shematn schorah b'tzido. If this is spelled out a specific schar enumerated by the Torah, in bezin shomata muzarnola, then bezin shomata is not the one that has to enforce it. That's the klal of the halacha. I don't know exactly, but I presume that the person has already been told the consequences. And a mitzvah asei was out being informed of the consequences. So we don't really know what the consequences are. So we can't say necessarily that the person has accepted upon himself the consequences. So if they know defined what the loss is, so then it's Bezdin's responsibility. But here the Rav Edishon told them the loss, as if to say, if you don't do it, this is what you're losing. That's itself the Einish, I presume. So that's the story in the Gemara. So the story in the Gemara specifically says that we don't force a person. And that's what the Ramah writes, and we come mokum in bezim kaifan amitzis kibud avayim, for this reason. So it's a mefurish gemara, not only in general about matan schar b'tzidah, but the gemara relates it exactly to kibud avayim. V'yesh lahakshas me'irushalmi. This life is not so simple, the Taz says. Because in the Rishalmi we find the following. Shehevi, b'tshuva the Ramban cited this. V'avi ha'shovas ha'avit. That returning to the mashkin that he took from a person that's impoverished, the morot l'kayim, the night time comes and it says he needs it. He needs it to go to sleep. He needs it to lay on at night. The morot l'kayim afabish and bezin b'shoron oleo, kevin sheyesh matan tzchor b'tzidah. The Torah spells out the tzchor for being l'kayim it. The komokom hainu, the Rishalmi says, shem halimu ha bezin einayim. that if Beis Din doesn't do anything about it, and aleihem einish, then Beis Din is not going to be held accountable in Shemayim. That's what the Yerushalmi says. But suppose Beis Din wants to take matters into their own hands and enforce the law, they have a right to do so. Except if they don't do so, Beis Din cannot be faulted before the Kisei HaKavod. So here we say that Beis Din has the right to enforce it. So then what was the problem in this particular case? Rav Mori walked into Beis Din, and Rav Chisda wanted to give him malchus to enforce Kibud Av V'Aim. So what did Rav Mori tell him? Shafku. Beis Din is entitled to enforce it. They're not obligated. They have every right to enforce the law. So what was the problem? Now, lest we want to say that perhaps that this Rishonli is not accepted la halacha, and that's why the Bavli disagrees, there became posuk Ramo b'hago. There are more paskins this way in Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat. So this is part of the halacha. So we can no longer say, well, the Bavli and Rishonli disagree. Because Shem Masha Omer of Mori Tan Rav Chizda, Shafku, why? The right to Shaper Kofayim, if Beis Din wants, they have every right to force them. That's the question. So here we have, the Gemara said, that we don't force a person. Why? Because it's Matan Tzchor B'Tzida. And yet the Gemara says in Yerushalmi that if Beis Din wants, they have a right to enforce it. They're just not obligated to enforce it. Uva Mordechai, Perek Nairish, and Vizpatsa, maybe Yerushalmi as a Vakosav Ale, Lefiz Elo Kosho, Hodarmin of Yerushalmi, the Perek Hamad Gedushin, that there's a Gemara in Yerushalmi, another Yerushalmi, which the Amir said the following, Halavai, Yiyu kol shmu osai breiren li, I wish that every halacha was as clear to me, kador de koifen aben lozen av, as the fact that we force the son to feed his father. Over parents, so how could this be? This is, again, it's kibud av aim, here we were kibud av aim specifically. And the Amor says in the Rishalmi, halavai, that I would know every halacha in kol haTorah kula as clearly as I know this halacha, that we are supposed to force him. So what's the pshat? So he was bothered by the Hanab Rishalmi Omash Kaifan Ben Lozan Av, force him. The mitzvah says Shematan Tzchor Vitzido, Parakalabos Omash Afku. The Tirat says that, so what did he answer to this problem? When it says Kaifan Ben, that we should force him. So he said, that's the side of the other Rishalmi. If Beis Din wants to, everyone said, he doesn't want to feed his father. And the Dayanim are incensed and they decide to give him an Einish, they have every right to do so. But they're not obligated to do so. But he says, my problem, they didn't resolve. Because if Beis Din wanted to do it, so how come the story in the Gemara in Chulin is they wanted to give the guy malchus for not being mechaber his father? And Rav Mori came and he told Rav Chisda to desist. What did they tell him to desist? They have a right to do it. So he's doing it. He's following the right. So he writes the following. You know what it means? He quotes one of the Balei HaTorah. He says, a kosvu, then koif and kfiya gedoylan in yina koitze yashateitze nafsa kushal mitzvah sasei. What the Gemara in Chulin means is, we certainly use kfiya. And we use all manner of coercion, which comes in all different forms. But we won't use an extreme form of coercion of atzat teitzei nafsha, as we would when the schar is not spelled out. Our tzat kfiya is some measure of coercion, we give the law some teeth to force a person to fulfill kibud av v'aim. He says, v'shem hochi omo shafku. Now he says, I'll explain to you, why did he tell him not to give him malchus kloimar? That he should kvar asisim lo biyush b'kfiya lo'omud. So you punished them already sufficiently. The fact that you publicly shamed him, you took a guy out and you tied him up and prepared him for the malchus, and the agent of Beis Din came out ready to start giving him the malchus, he's not going to come back to Shul Shabbos even if we let him off with his head held high. I mean, he wasn't brought into Beis Din without reason. So that's already enough of an Einish. We don't need Achatetei Nafsha. This is similar to the Maisa that's brought in Alam the Trufa. There was a maskil in the 18th century, and he was an associate of Moses Mendelssohn. So he heard, he was a clean-shaven guy, which is rather unusual for a really proper Jew in that era. And everyone heard that there was this great guy in Vilna the world has not seen the likes of in hundreds of years. A master of everything, all known disciplines of the world. So he decided that he wants to go and get an audience with the Gra and have a chance to speak to him. But he realized he's going to come to the Gra as a clean-shaven person and want to discuss philosophy with the Gra. The Gra is going to throw him out of his head. He's never going to get in the door. So he got an ingenious idea. His idea was, he wrote up a letter, ostensibly written by the rabbis in Italy, and Italy it was accepted at that time that Rabbanim were clean-shaven, that Jews were clean-shaven at least. And he came, and the letter stated the following, that they lived under the authority of an Italian noble who was a Catholic, and he was very skeptical about the Jews and their religion, if this was something that was real and of substance, or just something, you know, that he should not have any respect for at all. And he wrote up 100 philosophical questions. And he said if they give him good answers to these questions, then he'll treat the Jews. He'll see this as a substantial religion, and he'll treat the Jews with respect and dignity. And if not, he has no use for them. So he figured that this would, the guy couldn't turn him away on this basis. But he wanted to show that he had some, you know, qualifications. And he happened to be, he had written a work on synonyms in the Hebrew language. And we know in the Hebrew language there are no two exact synonyms. There are things that are similar, sosir and simcha, etc., ditzah, chedva, but each one has its own meaning. So he wrote on this thing, part of the introduction was that he's an author of a work on synonyms. So he came to the Gra. Now with this subterfuge, the Goyim let him in, they let him in. So the Goyim took the letter, and the Goyim read through all 100 questions nonstop, without saying a word. When the Goyim finished, the Goyim told them there are either 12 or 14 questions here, not more, not 100 questions. Why, he said. Well, if you realize it's 1 and 14 and 23 and 33 and 33 and 5 and 43, all of these are all the ultimate, they're all one question. And he broke all the questions down without reviewing it a second time, that there were not more than 12 questions. That's all there was. He was blown away. Then the Goyim proceeded to answer all the 12 questions that were left. And that's it. It resolved all the philosophical issues. So then the Goyim says to him, I see that it says that you are an author of a book on synonyms. Says, yeah, it's true. So the Goyim started to discuss. The Goyim was a master of the Talmud. He was a master of the Chumash. He was a master of the Kabbalah. He was a master of Bigduk. He was a master of all types of things in the world. The Hebrew language he was also a master of. So the Goyim started to engage him on the Hebrew language, on synonyms. So he asked him how many synonyms there are for Simcha. He told him this amount. So the Goyim said, what are they? So he told him all of them. So the Goyim said, you left out one. So he said, it doesn't mean that, it means something else. So the Goyim says, but Rashi in the Medrash say that that's what it means. It means Simcha. So he said, that's not the Fikshuta, that's not the real thing. So the Goyim, when he heard that, the Goyim turned around and he walked out. And he saw his audience with the Gra was over. So his audience with the Gra was over, so he packed his bags and he left. He's walking through the streets of Vilna, and two policemen came over to him, and they arrested him. And they took him to the Beis Din in Vilna. And the Goyim sent a letter to the Beis Din that he was Mevayish Rashi and Chazal, and he deserves an Einish for insulting Rashi and Chazal. So the Beis Din heard the case, and the Beis Din sentenced him to an Einish. So what was the Einish? The Einish was that he was placed in stocks. And they just kofso alom, they put him in stocks outside the shul in Vilna. And they wrote that every person that goes into the shul and out of the shul should spit upon him. And he had to be there a whole day. So this was the humiliation. And they didn't smack him up. They were mavayish him, like the Amar says here. They're tying him up to give him out because there's plenty enough biyish. Now we know this story because what happened is subsequently he wrote a letter to Moses Mendelssohn describing the events that had taken place. And the letter was intercepted. It was Matacherim of Intergeshem because they were trying to figure out then who Moses Mendelssohn was, if he was exactly straight or not. And he ends off with the following line. He says, my dear friend, Moshe, talking to Moshe Mendelssohn, you have to realize, he says, that Vilna is not Berlin. In Vilna, every Jew goes to shul 3 times a day. So that's what the Tah says here. Einshim come in different forms. You know, you can give a guy Malkus, and you can give him Bushes and Klimas. There's plenty enough of an Einish. So that's the Einish. So that's what the Taz says. And the Taz paskins lahalocha this way, that in terms of kibud av va'em, or any mitzvah, shemat torah b'tzido, that Bezdin can use a certain measure of coercion, whatever, physical coercion, humiliation, etc., to pressure a person to do it. Except we don't pull out all the stops, as we would for a mitzvah say, which is not matan torah b'tzido. That's a very, very fascinating Taz. In general, in this halacha, and in general about the whole inyan of the role of Bezdin in terms of a mitzvah aser. I wanted to look at one halacha first, which is in Sif Chav Beis in the Shulchan Aruch. And it's an oft-quoted halacha, and it's an obvious issue that everyone raises whenever this halacha comes up, so I wanted to address the issue. We saw last week in the Minchas Chinuch that Tabi Es Ovicha Ves Imecha, that we learn the responsibility of Ves Imecha to give cover to one's older brother. So that's recorded in the Shulchan Aruch. Chayiv Odnum Bechvayir Ochiv HaGodl Bein Shu Ochiv Be'Oviv, whether it's a paternal brother, or even if he's just a maternal brother, in other words, even on a half brother. And even if he has a younger brother who surpassed him as a Talmud Chacham, nevertheless, the younger brother is still obligated to give cover to his older brother. Now, the question that everyone asks about this halacha, what is this referring to? Does this mean Dafke, the eldest brother in the family? Or it means any brother that's older than I am. So if I'm the fifth brother, so this applies to all four brothers that are older than I am. This is the question that everyone always wants to know. And this issue was addressed by two of the Achrayim in the Shulchan Aruch itself. And the Beis Lechem Yehuda quotes the no lesser figure than the Arizal to articulate this halacha. Hainu gedoyla achem means the eldest of the brothers, shenichnas b'mokom ha'av. Because the eldest brother often takes responsibility in place of the father. Because he's the leader of the family, and consequently, in those matters that the father cannot take care of himself, who represents him? Usually the eldest son. So the Torah insisted that the eldest brother be given cover. And this is not referring just because you're older than the next one, you're the second, you're the third. The dafka means it's dafka limited to the eldest brother. And also we have, and the Gilgan Marshal also says, this Hainu Och Harishan, the first of the brothers, below Asheni, and not the second, Avshar Godu Mimeno B'Shonu. The first of the brothers, and not the second, Avshar Godu Mimeno B'Shonu. So you can have the situation where there are many brothers, and the eldest brother is the one that is obligated to give cover to. In other words, there may be, for example, they may have a half-brother or something, let's say from his mother who's older, etc., I don't know. The situation is the eldest brother, that's the one. Now, the Achronim do point out the following. There's a general halacha in this religion, we believe in giving cover to those that are older than we are. Even if they're not old, but people that are older than we are, Chazal say, were critical of Klal Yisrael when we see that Norim went before Skenim, so they said this was a siman that the community was not in proper order. A proper or community in proper order as the Skenim go, and after that the younger ones go. So there is an inyan of kavod that one has to have for every sibling that's older than his. But there's a special inyan of kavod uraisa, which is akin to the kavod for one's parents that one has to give to the eldest brother. And this is dafka limited to the eldest brother. It does not apply to anyone else, meaning even though my second brother, I'm the third brother, I have two older brothers. So both of them are older than I am. But nevertheless, despite the fact that the next oldest brother is older than I am, but the halacha does not apply to him. The halacha only applies to my oldest brother. He's the one that I have to give the cover to. So I wanted to articulate this particular halacha. Whenever this halacha is discussed, this is always the question that comes up: is who do we refer to with this halacha? So it's clear from the Achronim and the Shulchan Aruch that we refer dafka to the eldest of the brothers, only the oldest of the brothers himself.
The oldest child is the
It does not. The Arizal even, he quotes in the Beis Lechem Yehuda, says not only does it not apply to a brother who's older than him and not the eldest, it does not apply to a sister either. And I think the reason basically, as much as we have reasons, you know, reasons never fully explain any mitzvah that we have. And Rav Shamshon of Paul Hirsch, as much as he articulated timing of mitzvahs, is very careful. A time that we have for a mitzvah gives us a certain perspective. It will never illuminate every case that's associated with the mitzvah. By and large, in most of history, in most times, in most places, including even in the society today, who represents the family is usually not the oldest sister. It's usually an older brother. That's the derech haolam. There are exceptions. There are very capable women that are quite capable of executing that responsibility and being CEOs, etc. But we're talking the normal manner in which this evolves is that those responsibilities devolve upon the eldest brother.
What happens in the case when your father dies, my boy, the marshal, that the middle son or the younger son is the one that Akai in terms of the finances, or, and it's my boy, that the older brother is this much more marshal.
It doesn't change the halacha. As I'm saying, the timei hamitzvahs never fully illuminate the issues, and that's why, because we could have many cases. It's oftentimes the case where a brother that's younger has surpassed in both his skills, his ability, his financial resources, etc., the siblings that are older than his. But the halacha doesn't change. The halacha is talking that this is an insight that we have, which is a general explanation. It does not explain every single case. But in general, the halacha is net. From our perspective on the halacha is in very, very general notions. Understand? General.
Isn't there a little example
in terms of zaken? All right, that's we're talking. Zaken is something else. That's not in this halacha. We'll come to that a little bit. We'll touch that here, Rami.
The fact of the case where the oldest child is a girl, so the oldest son still gets the
cover. The oldest son still gets the cover. Yeah, that doesn't change. And even though it's true, a lot of times, listen, the reality is when the oldest one in the family is a sister, there's a woman that I know, she's today probably about 70 years old. She told me many years ago, her oldest sister, Hashem, was 10 years older than she was. She says, I had two mothers. In case my mother ever said yes, he said, my older sister said no. Now, there's a halacha which is we need to be very careful about, and that's brought in Reish Mem Simen Chav Dalet. Chayev Odom L'chabed Chomov, that we're obligated to give kovod to father-in-law, and as the Pesachei Tshuva cites, to a mother-in-law as well. So this not only is there a halacha of kibud av va'im, but it's kovod that's due to one's in-laws. That's a certain regard of covet for his wife. But that's plugged into covet for his wife also. There's another aspect, wrinkle to that. Now, the Shachs explains the following. Kosev Abach, the Heinrich Somcho b'miktsas the covet. It's not a full measure of kibbut ava'im, that one's obligated to give to one's in-laws, mitzad ha'alochim. But b'chayev l'chabdoi k'mo shoz kenim chashuvim. The kovod that I have to give to in-laws is the akin to the kovod that I would give to any elderly person that's a person of significance in the community. So the same way that I give kovod to an elderly person of significance, I have to give cover to my mother-in-law and father-in-law as well. No, the question is, we know why we're going to do it. The question is, what are the parameters of that cover? So the halacha states it's not exactly the same as the cover one has to give to one's parents. It means there is some measure of cover, but what is the length of the cover? The cover that we have to give to our parents really knows no end. We're talking about the kovod we have to give to in-laws does have limitations. So that's akin to the kovod that I have to give to an older person that's of chashivus, of note. Yeah,
Imagine the father-in-law,
still have to give them comfort. Yeah, listen, that happens. You know, I went to school, and there were two kids in the school. One was in my class, I was in the sixth grade, and one was in the second grade. And the sixth grader used to take the second grader home from school every day. The second grader was the uncle of the sixth grader. Very strange, but it happens. So, in the somebody who Shaul Mitzvahim writes that what was the part of the cover that one was obligated to give to one's in-laws was to come by the house on Friday afternoon and wish them good Shabbos. So, from Rabbi Shaul Mitzvahim, they chatzalik b'bracha. But that's the, an aspect of the cover that one was obligated to give.
Also
100% for a parent it's forget to keep it out of aim altogether, but even for an in-law. That Allah writes COVID is sometimes very hard to quantify. If we would take a piece of paper and we would write COVID, so we could write a whole lengthy description of what we feel is COVID. On the other hand, we could talk about things which we thought are not dignified. We could write another page. And they're all correct, but they all in their own regard have limitations, as we'll see in a moment. They're very fascinating and very important halacha. Ezo kibud. What does it mean by kibud? Machilo, mashkeo, that prepares food for him. Malbish, umachasa, to help him dress, to cover him. Machnis umoitse, to take him out when he needs to go out, to bring him home when he needs to go home. Then the Shulchan Aruch adds, in life, we can do a lot of things and still fail. V'yidnenolo b'sever ponim yofis. Now we have to do it in a manner which shows enthusiasm and love. And then we fulfill the covenant. Suppose he feeds them the fanciest foods in the world every single day. But he does it in a manner where he shows he's really annoyed that he has to do it. But he knows he has to do it. Listen, he can't walk away from it. It's a father, it's a mother. I'm not going to walk away. But if I didn't have the responsibility, he lets it be known he'd be a lot happier. So the Shulchan Aruch states, is Nena Shalom. Covet is not only limited to a particular set of actions, but has to be reflected in the attitude which is projected when we're involved in that as well.
The question I have, Rob, is what about listening to a parent? Sometimes.
Well, come to that. That's not for this at this particular juncture. What the parameters of listening, what one is mechuyev to listen to, what one is not mechuyev to listen to, that's a different problem. Now, on the other hand, we can do things which do not seem to be by covet, and yet they are the greatest manifestations of covet. How could that be? Look at it, it's undignified. In matchin over v'rechayim means he really pressures his father relentlessly. But for what reason? Kavanos l'toyva. His kavanos l'toyva. She notzil over v'dover kosher yisum mizeh, because to save him from something that's worse than this. And he tries to show his father that he's conciliatory, that he's concerned for him. Indeed, he tries very much that his father should accept it. I have to tell you, it's one of the hardest things. This Ramah is one of the hardest things. I'll tell you about myself. It's a very personal story. My mother, Alei Hashalom, nearly last part of her life, the last year or so, 2 years of her life, she was not in a position to stay a whole day by herself. And my oldest brother and my sister-in-law, Zayn Gesund, they treated her and not shy to express how they took care of her. But they're both busy people. My sister-in-law is gone. you know, a job for the Board of Ed for many, many hours a day. She was very early in the morning, so I can get back to him about 6 at night. My brother's in business and often travels away on business. He's away for extended periods. And we reached the point we just realized it's not safe that she should stay there the entire day herself. She could be 10, 11 hours. There's nobody in the house. My mother, Aleha Shalom, was a very fiercely independent woman. And the idea of having someone around to take care of her, she rebelled at the thought. And I tried many, many times to convince her. I still can picture in my mind's eye driving up Rockaway Turnpike next to the airport one time, bringing her from my brother's house to mine, and trying to convince her that she needs someone to help her. Talk to her, yeah, sie versteht, she understands. Aber tachlis halacha lemaisa, nothing became of it. That's where it ended. In the summer, one year, my brother and sister-in-law called me up. I'm in the country. They said, listen, Bo, Mayama, no, it's just unsafe. It's not shaykh. You know, we can't go on like this. It's totally unsafe. She has to have someone to be there with her. And I have to take care of it. They can't do anything about it. So I said, okay, I'll listen. But I'll have to take care of it. So I called up my mother, Allah Shalom, and I told her, listen, your doctors insist, which wasn't exactly the case, but I wanted to make it this. If I asked them, they certainly would have said that. There was no question that that's what a doctor told. So I told the doctors insist that it's unsafe for you to be home by yourself. I said, and we as children have to fulfill that responsibility of caring for you and seeing that you're safe. That's our obligation to do so. And consequently, we're going to be bringing a lady, and she's going to be 8 hours a day in the house. I said, I hope that you'll realize that this is for your best interest and accept it, but we have no choice in it. Whether you're 100% pleased with it or not, we're still going to have to bring them because we have no other way of caring for you except in this fashion. And this was in the evening, it was just before Marav time, and I went off to Marav, and I sit in the shul in the country next to an Adam Godel, the Rosh Shiva of the yeshiva that I stay in. There's Adam Godel from the greatest Talmidim of Aharon Kotler, a very wise person. And after Marv, I went over to him and told him I'm a Yismanch. So I had to do what I did tonight with my mother. It's, you know, it's very difficult. You know, that I. So he looked at me and he said to me, he said, it's not a question if your mother wants it or she doesn't want it. It's a question, it's sakonas nefoshes b'chol to be without it. And you were 100% obligated to do what you did. And you did what was right. That's what you're obligated to do. You could not shrink back from that responsibility. And you're p'koach nefesh. And you had to do what you did. But it's a very difficult responsibility. But the Ramah tells us this is covet. Covet is not always, you know, to sit a person in the place that they want to be and make them small. Sometimes the covet is very difficult to give. As the Ramah describes it very graphically, matchen of a berechayim, he presses him very, very greatly. Why? Because he realizes the consequences of not doing so are far worse. So it is a very, very awesome responsibility. When I look in retrospect, I understand very well, very poignantly, the words of Abaya in Shas. And I often speak in the Beis HaKnesses and to my Talmidim as well with an admonition of the Chovas HaLevavos. Chovas HaLevavos says that whatever we learn at one point in life, we have to come back and learn at different points in life again. Why? Because when we learn it oftentimes in our youth, the 10, 15, or 20 years old is one perspective. If we come back to with the age of 50, 55, 60, it's a totally different halacha. Why? Because life and its realities are very different. In our youth, I used to relate that Abaya, as we know, never saw his parents. After conception, his father died, then his mother died in childbirth. And he was raised by Rabbi Bar Nachmani, which is the reason that he was called Abaya. He called him Tatala, and he's referred to that way because his name was Nachman, and he didn't want to use Rabbi Bar Nachmani, his father's name. So he was called Abaya Tatala, my Klinkin, my little child. So he remarked his nechama to himself for his situation, that he grew up without parents. he said that at least I didn't have to struggle with this very difficult mitzvah of Kibbutz Avei. You know, I didn't seek that solution to the problem, but at least that's what I gained something from the situation. So of course, so. When we're young, we tend to look at this chazal of the clashes which exist between, you know, teenage children and parents. That's one nature of clashes. You know, they're starting to assert themselves, to think that they know what life is about, subject to all kinds of mistakes, and, you know, feeling that they're much wiser than their parents are. And this leads inevitably to a certain measure of conflict in teenage years. So when we look at that chazal, if you're a young man and you learn the Gemara in Kedushin, your Rebbe tells it to you, so we relate to it from the perspective of a person that's 10 or 15 years old. But when I look back at this chazal now, there's a very different perspective to that chazal. Abaye, I don't think, was talking about the conflicts that we have in youth. But Abaye was talking about a much more issues that I just spoke about presently. The struggle in life as mature people to give kavod, and all the kavod that's due, and that the Rebbeinu Shlomo expects of us, and yet to care for them at the same time. That is a much more difficult problem than the problems we face as teenagers. These are excruciatingly difficult problems with no simple solutions. You know, as teenagers, those are passing problems of adolescence. Problems that we have to face in midlife with aging parents are of an entirely different order. And it's a day-to-day, constantly a struggle to try to arrive at what the halacha expects of us, what is correct, and how to implement the halacha. And that's a much more difficult process, yes.
What about the opposite issue of trying to ask a baby
But that's also part of what's necessary. Sometimes a parent may want something which is negative for them. And that's included in this Ramot too. That to force to be demanding of them at times, because it's ultimately for their benefit. And that's a very difficult line to draw. Short of Shlomo HaMelech, who has the wisdom to decide in every single case where is the right place to place the emphasis. And it's a very painful process that you're describing. With this Adam Gadol that I mentioned to you, he had a very elderly father. His father was a Talmud of the Mir. He'd been the secretary of Rav Lezer Yudel, Shimon of the Mir, before the war. A very noble person, a Balmusser. And in his older years, he deteriorated in his mental abilities, and suffered from Alzheimer's. And the last time that he remarked, and he made a remark to me directly, I was outside with him, and he was a man of about 90, I guess, and his son was whatever, 65 or something like that range. And he says to me in Yiddish, he says, you know, it's very strange. He says, if you watch the two of us, he says, you would think that I'm the child and my son is the father. A poignant statement, a very painful statement. As a person that his entire life, a dignified person, a person of seichel, a person of a great person, and realize that his abilities have ebbed. So this is very difficult. Life has very, very difficult issues in Kibbutz Avei. Very difficult issues. I mean, there are issues that takes tremendous wisdom how to resolve. The halacha states there are certain things that a parent cannot demand of his child. A child is not obligated to listen. Among those things are the following. Im avreitza l'shoras is Talmud sharaitz is at the very end of the Siman Reishma. Talmud sharaitz alolechas l'mokom achah. A Talmud decides he wants to go learn a yeshiva X. Shehu boteach sheyira Siman brocha b'tamudo lifnei arav shasham. He likes the roshuva there and he feels he'll be matzliach with this roshuva. But aviv meichaboy, and his father doesn't want him to go there. For what reason? If he should doyeg, he's concerned. Sheba oiso hayira ovdik l'chovim malilam. the non-Jews in that city frame Jews, and it's dangerous to go there. They'll frame him. And a tzorach lishmael over b'zeh. He's not obligated to listen to his father, since he has the responsibility to learn, and he feels he'll best succeed in this place. Even though his father is concerned for his security, he's not obligated to listen. The father protests the son's choice of a spouse. In Tzorach Lishmoya La'av, he's not obligated to listen to him. Here we're talking about obligations. But where is the wisdom, the chokhmah in this world to go from these from the obligations to practically how to implement them? How does it work in the real world? How do you deal with this halacha? These are very painful issues. A father's concern for his son. How do you work it out practically? It's a very poor solution in life if you have to come and say that this is the halacha and that's it. Too bad for you. And I'll show you a little bit the chokhmah that's involved in this. There's a fellow that I know. He wanted to learn at a certain yeshiva. And his father wanted him to learn elsewhere. And they couldn't agree. So they went to Rav Moshe. They asked Rav Moshe what he should do. I don't know. It's an halacha in the Shulchan Aruch that says that you're supposed to listen to the son. What did Rav Moshe answer them? Rav Moshe said, he's a guy in his teens, he said. It's true to such a halacha, he says. But that halacha is when you're mature enough to make a wise decision. But if you're not mature enough to make a wise decision, then he has to listen to his father. Because who says the learning is better for him? His father thinks the learning is better for him someplace else. So if he's mature, okay, aliyah. So the Shulchan Aruch said he has to listen. But if you're still in your impulsive youth, then the father predominates. Because he understands better than a child that lacks maturity. And that was the struggle, believe me, of Ramesha, of how to make the halacha compatible with the realities of life. To create machlokes with the halacha is very simple. To live with shalom within the halacha, that's the chokhmah. I often tell people, there's a big Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezra. A very large part of that Shulchan Aruch deals with the halachic obligations of husband to wife and wife to husband. I said, but woe unto the person who settles how to deal with those problems by coming to bed and that bed should pass them to him according to the Shulchan Aruch. Life is to have the chokhmah, the wisdom of how to resolve the problems without going to court. And these are the tremendous chokhmahs that are involved in difficulty of dealing with the issues in real terms, in real life, with the issues of being mekayim kibud av v'aim. In most cases, that's what Ramosha was saying. Now that changes in each society. Yeah. In European society, a person of 14 years old was expected to stand on his own 2 feet. So either if he was a person of tremendous ability, he went to learn, and if not, he went to work, and he was expected to hold it up his own from the age of 14. And that's it. And pursue a career and earn a living, and he had to be a ganze mensch. That's not the society that we live in. A 14-year-old in European society, I wish I would have said a different halacha. That's a person that was expected to have a tremendous amount of maturity to understand how to live life. That's something else. Again. But then, how painful is the situation if a parent and child don't see eye to eye? This is, when a rov has to deal with a situation, you have to be mispallel that you should have 100 times. You said the 100 chokhmahs from Shlomo HaMelech to know how to deal with that situation. I've been involved in such situations. And they're very difficult. They're very painful. Ad kan for today, Rabbi Yisrael.
Next week, part 3 or No, I don't think I'm going to make a pass. I may go to Muir.
Uh-huh.